I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, a conversation about the future of the Maryland Republican Party with the newly re-elected chair of the Maryland GOP, Dirk Hare. Governor Larry Hogan's election victory last month was decisive and historic. Not since 1954 had a Republican governor been returned to the governor's mansion in Annapolis for a second term. In other races, however, the story was different. County executive seats in Howard and Anne Arundel counties flipped from red to blue, and in Baltimore County, a progressive Democrat prevailed against one of Governor Hogan's closest allies. Dirk Hare joins me to talk about what's ahead for Republicans as the Hogan administration 2.0 gets underway. Plus, J. Wynn Russick reviews the importance of being earnest and remembering our dear friend, Gilbert Sandler. First, the news. Throughout his first term, Governor Larry Hogan enjoyed approval ratings that were the envy of governors around the country. His approval was topped only by another Republican governor in a very blue state, Charlie Baker of Massachusetts. And when he ran against his Democratic opponent, former NAACP President Ben Jealous, Mr. Hogan outraised and outpolled Jealous throughout the campaign. His victory over Jealous was decisive. He won by 12 points, and he made history as the first Republican governor to be reelected in Maryland since 1954. Already, there are pundits who tout Hogan as an alternative to Donald Trump in the next presidential race. The governor has made no indication that he's interested in a run for the White House, but his image as a bipartisan player in Annapolis stands in stark contrast to the bombastic president and the highly polarized political climate in Washington, D.C. Republicans in Maryland are outnumbered by Democrats 2-1 in registrations, but Hogan's resounding victory has clearly energized and enthused his party. A few weeks ago, I spoke with Maya Rockymore Cummings and Kathleen Matthews, who at the time were running to be the next chair of the Maryland Democratic Party. Maya Cummings won that election, and she has begun regrouping Democrats after their second loss in a row in their bid to capture the governor's mansion. Today, I'm delighted to welcome to Midday the newly reelected chair of the Maryland Republican Party. Dirk Hare is a Washington, D.C.-based attorney with the firm of Fox Rothschild, LLP. He's also a veteran Republican political operative. He worked as a legislative aide to former U.S. Senator Dan Coats, who now serves as the Director of National Intelligence in the Trump administration. Dirk Hare also managed congressional campaigns for Republican candidates in Indiana and Wisconsin, and he served as the chair of the Maryland House and Senate Party Caucus Committees. Before taking on the chairmanship of the Maryland GOP, he served as the party's legal counsel. We'll take your calls and comments a little later in the program. For now, you are welcome to check us out on the WIPR Facebook page, where we are streaming our conversation live. Mr. Hare, it's really great to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So what does Mr. Hogan's victory, as I mentioned, it was decisive. He led the entire time. He outraised Mr. Jealous by a lot. What do you think this means for the future of the party here in Maryland?
Oh, I think it makes our future very bright. I think Governor Hogan ran an excellent campaign. You know, one of the things I chuckle about sometimes is in Maryland, obviously, we all know that the numbers 2-1 disadvantage Democrats to Republicans. But, you know, it wasn't more than 10 years ago that Senator President Mike Miller said the Republicans are, you know, dead and buried. And we've won every governor's race since that time. So, you know, we continue to make progress. And how I explain it is on a two steps forward, one step backward basis. If you look back to 1998, when we thought Ellen Sowerbrey might be able to win. And at that point, we lost a tough race and we only had 35 House members and 13 state senators. And, you know, today, 20 years later, we have a Republican governor. We have 42 House members and 15 senators. So we slow and steady wins the race, I suppose.
Mr. Hogan is touted by an awful lot of people around the country as a really unique and uniquely talented politician. I mean, do you think Mr. Hogan's victory was because of his own personal skill in the game of politics, or was it an expression of affection for the Republican platform, whatever that might be here in the age of Trump?
No, I think the governor did an excellent job of defining his own brand and got out in front of you know, what otherwise might have been a tougher race for him in the state of Maryland. And I think, you know, it was really his execution on his strategy that won the race for him.
What does it mean to you? You're from the Midwest originally. You're working in Washington as a lawyer. You're running the Maryland Republican Party. As you mentioned, the Democrats have a 2-to-1 registration advantage, but they've lost the last two elections, last three, against against Democratic candidates. What does it mean to you to be a Republican in this day and age?
I mean, I think most Republicans identify with fiscal responsibility and individual freedom, if you want to kind of look at what is the defining characteristic of that all Republicans share. So, you know, I mean, to me, Governor Hogan represents that, and I am personally very happy that he won. And I think, you know, that's very positive for Maryland as we continue to try to make gains in the General Assembly. It's very helpful to have a Republican governor that, similar to you said with Massachusetts, it's important, I think, to have a Republican governor to keep balance.
When it comes to balance, Mr. Hogan made great hay about the bipartisan efforts that he identified that happened during his first term. There are Democrats who are frustrated, accusing Mr. Hogan of essentially appropriating their ideas and calling them Hogan-esque. We can argue about that later, but many, given the bifurcation in the national political scene, the extreme left, the extreme right, the people whose anti-Trump fervor, even people in the Republican Party whose anti-Trump fervor is, you know, always at a fevered pitch. The pundits that I've talked to talk about how the center, which Mr. Hogan seems to represent, this sort of moderate Republican, whatever that means in this day and age, the center's been hollowed out, that it's very difficult to find anybody in the middle, and the left and the right are easily identifiable. What does that mean for the party as a whole here in Maryland and nationally?
So I think the center is hollow only among political activists on either side. I actually think among voters, the center is very robust and large. And I think the reason why you have seen over the last 20 years almost a ping pong effect with Republicans in power, Democrats in power, Republicans, Democrats, is because I think both parties overplay their hand when they get control. I think they, you know, my wife's on the county council in Anne Arundel County, and already you can see the tea leaves coming on a variety of initiatives over the Democrats who barely took control and think that they have a mandate for spending and other initiatives that I don't really think is the case at all. I think,
Folks that Steve Hsu lost that race.
Correct.
Against Stuart Pittman.
Uh-huh. So, you know, I mean, I think that's why we see seemingly almost every cycle a backlash.
It's interesting to me that the two leading Republicans in Maryland in terms of the elevation of their office are Governor Hogan and then Andy Harris, who's the one member of the Maryland congressional delegation. There are 8 members total. There's 7 Democrats and Andy Harris. And Andy Harris and Larry Hogan politically, philosophically couldn't be farther apart. What do you make of that? Mr. Hogan, again, purporting that he is a centrist. Mr. Harris, a member of the Freedom Caucus, the Tea Party, couldn't be further to the right.
Well, I think they have different roles to play. You know, being in Congress is very different than being a governor. A governor is really dealing with meat and potatoes issues of running the state, whereas Congress, you know, for better or worse, tends to address more of the polarizing social issues of the day. So, you know, I think, you know, certainly in a number of respects on a range of issues, I think they're similar in view. But the governor just has a different portfolio, if you will, than what Congress does.
Does it surprise you that that district, District 1, is not represented by a Republican who leans more to the moderate side of things or the moderate middle?
No, that's a very conservative district. I mean, when the Democrats redrew the maps in 2010, they intentionally packed every conservative Republican they possibly could into that district. I mean, you can see it. I mean, why would the Eastern Shore, you like snake up the top of Maryland to grab a bunch of Carroll County to throw in there?
Right,
it's just,
right.
It's just
it goes into Baltimore County, Harford County. Yeah, yeah, it's all over the place. Is Larry Hogan a model for the National Party? Is the message that Mr. Hogan asserted during his campaign win this time a message that you think the National Party should take a look at?
I think he can be. I think the ball's in his court on that front. You know, I think there's an opportunity for him there, and I think he's probably going to explore it. But I think really the ball's in his court because he certainly didn't run as a traditional Republican.
There was a meeting of anti-Trump conservatives held just a week or so ago. The topic of the panel, whatnot, was called Starting Over the Center-Right After Trump, and Mr. Hogan was the keynote speaker at that conference. This is in the New Yorker magazine I'm reading about this, and his is one of several names adduced as a possible presidential candidate. Do you have any insight into whether or not the governor is interested in pursuing that?
I don't know what his plans are in terms of pursuing the presidency. I would imagine he certainly has the opportunity to increase his national profile based on a, you know, an excellent campaign and a very successful win.
Would you like to see him do it?
In 2024.
2024. You want him to finish this term, huh?
Yes.
But you've gotten no indication from Mr. Hogan or any of the folks that work with him that this is something he's thinking about for 2020.
No, not on 2020.
Is Boyd Rutherford now automatically the next person that the party is going to be getting behind for a run to succeed Mr. Hogan?
You know, I'm having conversations with a number of folks who either have expressed interest to me already or who I think might be a potential candidate like Boyd. And, you know, those conversations are better left in private.
But so there are a lot of people thinking about what's after the Hogan campaign.
I'm very confident we will have an excellent candidate in 2022.
Mm-hmm. And do you expect that Boyd Rutherford, as the lieutenant governor in this term, would have a higher profile than he had in the first term?
Well, I think he probably. I mean, I think he has had a very solid profile, great portfolio. I think the governor relies on him appropriately and heavily on a range of internal issues in terms of managing the government. I mean, Boyd's background was he was at both GSA and then under Governor Ehrlich, he was the Secretary of the Department of General Services here. So I think Boyd has an excellent understanding of how the machinery of government works and operates, and in particular in areas that are not glamorous but are important in terms of, you know, construction, spending, technology, things like that.
Dirk Hare is my guest. He is the chair of the Maryland Republican Party. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We are streaming our conversation on the WIPR Facebook page, and we'll start taking your calls and comments in just a little bit. When it comes to the bench, as it's known, I talked to Maya Rockamore Cummings as well as Kathleen Matthews at a time that they were running against each other to be the chair of the Democratic Party. As I mentioned at in the opening, Maya Rockamore Cummings won that race. She talks about building a bench, and she thinks that this last election actually showed that the Democrats have a very strong bench. Republicans did not do as well in these county executive races we mentioned in the General Assembly and in the Senate. There was this so-called drive for five that didn't happen. You didn't pick up five seats. Without winning some of those down ballot races, how do you develop a bench that can, you know, challenge Democrats not only for the governorship but for county executive seats, et cetera?
We have a better bench at the county level among Republican women than the Democrats do among Democrat women. So this election, which at the county level, we obviously did lose a couple of county executives, which was very disappointing. But statewide, 42 Republican women won county races and only 17 lost. 50 Democrat women won throughout the state on the county level races, and 49 of them lost. We actually substantially outperformed the Democrats at the county council level, and that's where your bench comes from, right? It's the county council. It's the state's attorneys. We have six women state's attorneys in the state, and I mean, to me, we did a tremendous job of winning county level races, and that's where our bench comes from.
Steve Shue and Alan Kittleman. Steve Shue, the soon to be former, or I guess he's now the former Anne Arundel County executive, and Alan Kittleman, who is the county executive for Howard County. They've both been given jobs by Mr. Hogan in the Hogan administration. Mr. Shue is going to run the Opioid Operational Command Center. Mr. Kittleman is going to run the Maryland Workers' Compensation Commission. They both have jobs that pay in the mid six figures. they were considered rising stars in the Republican Party. The fact that they're out of elective office, what does that mean for them? And is that a sort of go back to ground zero, go back to the starting gate to figure out another bench? Or do you see a role for them in elective office even in 2020?
I don't know if either one of them wants to run again. Look, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was very disappointing to have Steve and Alan in particular lose. They were Howard County and Anne Arundel County had historic Democrat level turnout. I think the numbers in Howard County in particular are just breathtaking. In 2014, when Alan won for county executive, he got 53,000 votes. And this year, when he lost, he got 67,000 votes. And it really the beginning, the middle, and the end of the story is the Democrat turnout was extraordinarily high. Statewide in 2014, the Democrats' turnout was 46.5%. This year, it was 61.5%. Now, Republican turnout was still higher than the Democrats. It was 63.5% as compared to 58.7% in 2014. So we were up almost 5% on the Republican side. But it's hard, all other things being equal, to overcome that kind of increased turnout among the Democrats.
Did Donald Trump beat Steve Shue and Alan Kittleman?
I don't think Donald Trump beat them. I think Donald Trump motivated lots of Republicans and Democrats to come out and vote for very different reasons. And in some places, we actually benefited from those who support Trump. So we picked up, we won a state Senate seat on the lower eastern shore. Mary Beth Carrozza took out longtime incumbent Jim Mathias, and she very definitely benefited from President Trump. We also won a very hotly contested House race in Hagerstown. Paul Quarterman, same effect. In Anne Arundel County, it motivated a lot of Democrat women in particular in the 45 to 64-year-old demographic to come out, and they voted heavily against Republicans.
We'll have more of our conversation with Dirk Hare. He has just been reelected as the chairman of the Maryland Republican Party, and we will chat more with Mr. Hare when we come back after a short break. We'll take your calls and comments if you'd like to be part of our conversation here on Midday. It's 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Stick around.
This is Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, a quick note about tomorrow's program. My guest will be the acclaimed playwright and author Sarah Rule. We're going to talk about her latest book. It's called Letters from Max, A Book of Friendship. It's a collection of her correspondence with Max Ritvo, her former student, who became her close friend and professional confidant. Max Ritvo was a poet who had been attracting a significant following before he died of cancer at the age of 25. This book is an extraordinary compendium of deep and insightful ruminations on the big issues facing humankind, things like life and death and the afterlife and love. But it's also a cheerful and playful chronology of how two friends formed a beautiful and inspiring bond. Sarah Rule joins me tomorrow here on Midday. We're also going to be treated to some holiday music from Voices Rise. That's a choir of singers who are based at Paul's Place here in West Baltimore. That's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. Coming up later today, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with her review of The Importance of Being Earnest at the Everyman Theater in Baltimore. But first, more with Dirk Hare. He is the chairman of the Maryland Republican Party. We are talking politics, the future of the Republican Party, the future of the two-party system in general. You are welcome to be part of our conversation on Midday. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. To find us on Twitter, it's @MiddayWYPR. To find me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Mr. Hare, the you mentioned a couple of pickups that you got in the Senate. You picked up a seat in the Senate, and that's actually quite unusual in terms of the national picture. There are a lot of state legislatures across the country that had some pretty severe losses on the Republican side.
There were, and we were very happy that we both got a Republican governor reelected and picked up one Senate seat. We actually had two pickups and one loss, one incumbent, Gail Bates in Senate District 9, which is Howard and Carroll counties.
Let's go to the phones to Crofton. Walt, welcome to Midday with Dirk Hare. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to touch on the Anne Arundel County county executive race.
Great. What's your comment?
Steve Hsu recently said that he felt that he lost because of anti-Trump backlash. I think that's kind of ridiculous. I'm a Republican. I didn't vote for Steve Hsu. And the reason that he lost is because he managed to alienate pretty much every public sector employee through his slashing the school budget, rampant overdevelopment of the county, not paying attention to the needs of constituents. So I think he's kind of delusional when he talks about anti-Trump backlash. It was all about him and his failed policies in our county.
Are you a county employee yourself?
I am. I'm a teacher.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks for that comment, Walt. I appreciate it. So, Dirk Hare, I mean, the fiscal responsibility has always been a linchpin of the Republican platform. Republicans have been known, for better or for worse, as being, amenable to many development ideas and developers in particular. What's your response?
I mean, I don't think that's why Steve lost. The caller's opinions are, I mean, everybody's got an opinion in politics, but the data would certainly indicate that it was Democrat turnout. And the primary motivator of Democrat turnout in places like Crofton and Severna Park and some other places that voted less Republican this year is simply the, large increase in Democrat women ages 45 to 64 years old. And I think you can accurately, if you're Steve Hsu, point to the motivating factor for why these people who don't typically vote in a gubernatorial election year voted as President Trump.
And in that neck of the woods in District 33 in the House, the Maryland House, Democrat Heather Bagnall beat an incumbent Republican there, Tony McConkie. It was a very close race, less than 200 votes. Mr. McConkie had some troubles prior to the election. But does that fit into your theory? Again, is this Democratic women coming out supporting yet another Democratic woman? I mean, Mr. McConkie was an incumbent there, and had been pretty successful heretofore.
Yeah, I can give you some both anecdotal and actual data. So we have already now the detailed precinct level files that shows by age, sex, party affiliation, and so forth who actually voted. And the reason I keep harping on the 45 to 64 year old Democratic women is because they voted in much greater numbers on a percentage basis than any other demographic. And specifically with respect to with Tony's race, because it was so close, we were manning the absentee ballot canvas at the Anne Arundel County Board of Elections. And at one point, I was watching just a series of ballots that the Republican and Democrat teams were reviewing. And we hit a run in District 33 in a Crofton precinct of 12 straight ballots where 10 of the 12 voted for Ben Jealous on down, straight Democrat, every single Democrat. And two of the ballots, they voted for Hogan and Democrat straight down the ballot. So not even Governor Hogan was withstanding that at certain levels. So, I think in that area. Now, you can make the same case. I'm sure if you're standing in Worcester County at the same canvas table, you're seeing the opposite effect. You're seeing a straight Republican vote.
And, of course, Mr. Hogan also picked up voters between this election and the prior election, his first election in 2014, in every county in the state. I mean, he was up nearly 8% in Montgomery County. He was up nearly 10% in Baltimore City and nearly just a little more than 13% in Prince George's County. So there were a lot of Democrats who were crossing over. And this is the challenge that Maya Rockamore Cummings talked about when we had her on the show for the next time. There, this 2-to-1 registration advantage didn't really play out in anywhere near the way that it's supposed to, you know, theoretically, because so many Democrats crossed over. What will it take to get Democrats to cross over for these candidates who are down ballot? In other words, next time around, is your election strategy, your political strategy going to be adjusted in any way?
So I think we need to modernize the Republican brand. That's something I'm very focused on. And I think we can do that in a couple of different ways. One is, I think, candidate recruitment for county council, county executive, general assembly is going to need to be more diverse. There's no doubt in my mind that if we have a more diverse candidate base in the Republican Party, and particularly more women, that we're going to do better. I mean, I cited the statistic earlier where we actually did really well statewide in county level races with Republican women. So, you know, I think that's very important. I also think we're going to need to have a communication strategy where Republicans as candidates are more relatable. And that kind of goes to modernizing the brand. And I think really what we need to do is make sure that we're focused on, and I think Governor Hogan did a good job of this, but focused on things that actually directly affect voters in their everyday lives. You know, best example I can give you is, you know, traffic and traffic congestion more or less affects every voter in kind of the I-95 corridor, right? I mean, if we can convince voters that we're actually going to help them, you know, get 5 or 10 minutes in their day to get from work to get their kid to, you know, basketball practice or dance recital, I think those are the kind of things we need to focus on.
What about convincing voters that the future of transportation isn't in highways and cars, it's in mass transit?
I mean, I think that's true in some areas of the state, but you have to have a density to make that work, both financially as well as functionally for people, right? So I think it's a mix. I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all, but I think, generally speaking, the party that figures out how to reduce traffic congestion will be rewarded for it.
You know, because when I hear your formula for modernizing the party, it sounds to me an awful like a lot like Bobby Jindal talking in 2014, you know, saying that this is what we've got to do. The Republican Party has to be a much bigger tent, a more open tent, a more diverse group. That was what was the blueprint for Republican success in 2016 was going to be that. And then, of course, as we all know, the anti that was nominated and elected president.
I don't think Maryland is, you know, necessarily the same among its Republican outlook as states in the South or the rural Midwest or West. I mean, we're a little different. We're more similar with a number of the Northeast states. And we have these conversations at the RNC meetings all the time. And I think what I said will work for Maryland. Would it work for Wyoming? Probably not, right? They don't really have traffic congestion in Wyoming.
Yeah, they're hurting for folks is what they're right. Hurting for. They're just looking for bodies out there. We've talked now several times about the fact that, you know, Democrats enjoy a 2-to-1 registration advantage here in Maryland. But the last time registration was opened, the far and away, the biggest increase in party affiliation were the people who registered with no party affiliation, independents. Now, they're out of the primary system, given the way the system works here in Maryland. But what do you make of the fact that more and more people are choosing not to affiliate with either the blue or the red side?
I think in Maryland, that's more of an opening for the Republican Party than is the Democrats, because the easier thing to do in a state like Maryland, if you're registering to vote, is to just register as a Democrat, because you will, generally speaking, have more options in a lot of the primary races in various areas around the state. So I think if someone is choosing to register as unaffiliated, and, you know, I mean, I think that at least tells us they're open-minded to voting for a Republican.
22% of registered voters in Howard County are now registered as unaffiliated. I mean, Howard County is a Washington suburb, you know, for the most part. What does that tell you about the Republican message and the Democratic message, for that matter?
I think, you know, going back to the comment I made about most voters, I think, are in the middle, and most party activists are on one pole or the other. I think that amply demonstrates that. I think they're up for grabs, and I think it's an opportunity for Republicans in Maryland.
It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest today, Dirk Hare. He is the chair of the Maryland Republican Party. What should the legislative priorities for the General Assembly be when they reconvene next month?
You know, the party doesn't get into the business of telling our caucuses what their priorities should be. But, you know, as I mentioned, in general, Republicans like to see limited government and individual liberty, things of that nature. So along those lines, I would, of course, like to see some tax relief. I think the federal tax bill created a surplus for the state of Maryland. If the state of Maryland doesn't go and make a tax law adjustment, essentially tax relief that could and should go to Marylanders.
They made an attempt to do that the last time. I mean, they did try to address the changes in the federal tax code.
Yeah, and they did not address it entirely. Governor Hogan actually put forth a bill that would have had no impact on Marylanders, but the legislature decided that it wanted to use, as I understand it, some of the money for other initiatives.
There's a big surplus. I mean, folks have estimated it at like $500 billion. That's a lot of money. What should it be used for?
So actually, I'm going to cite approvingly to what Comptroller Franco said the other day, which is, okay, there is a surplus right now, but you can see the storm clouds building on the horizon.
A recession.
Correct. And he said, let's not go crazy. So, I mean, I think they should make some prudent capital investments, because capital investments do not obligate on an operating basis.
In schools?
Schools. I think schools would school construction in particular. I know we have about a $4 billion unmet school construction need, and I think that's an excellent place to put those dollars. And also, I would say, as well, some hardware and security upgrades. So uses that would obligate capital funds, I think, are a better, more responsible use of surplus, as opposed to increasing the ongoing operating funds through things like raises. And
how about dramatic increases in certain areas? For example, the Kerwin Commission, they've just delayed their timetable for releasing this report that, Lord knows, it may never come out. But, whenever it does come out, it's going to be a very pricey piece of work. Where's the stance of the Republican Party on the need for implementing the Kerwin recommendations?
We don't have a position on it. However, I will tell you, the only assumption I can draw from the fact that they just pulled the report is that I think probably Speaker Bush and President Miller see the same fiscal storm clouds brewing, and they probably are not interested in me 3 years from now in the middle of a recession talking about how they, you know, spent us into oblivion. I'm guessing that probably had a lot to do with it.
And of course, there's redistricting, and we didn't get a chance to talk about that. We're out of town, but that, of course, will loom large in the Assembly when they return. Well, it's really great to meet you. I really appreciate it, and I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely. I would love to.
Dirk Hare, he has just been reelected as the chairman of the Maryland Republican Party. Coming up after a short break, theater critic Jay Wynn Russick joins us with her latest review. It's a classic, The Importance of Being Earnest. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.